right, so we're at item number 10 now for lobbyist penalty correspondence. So can we get staff report on this one?
Sure. So number 10. So this lobbyist had a past violation in first quarter of 2017. And this is the second one for fourth quarter of 2019. So I was recommending a reduction to $50, the minimum penalty amount is $50. And so going from 70 down to 50 for a second violation.
Okay. Any discussion on this one?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum for just a moment. Do you
yes.
think this is a good time?
Yeah, Commissioner Fiskum, go ahead.
I just wanted to, I just wanted to express my concern with the second paragraph in Mr. Lawrence's letter on page 39. It represents for me his failure to understand what lobbyist registration is. It is two things. It is A, registration, and it is B, filing expenditure reports, and he seeks our, seeks some interest, our interest in avoiding the penalty because he doesn't spend any money. Well, we also, there's a registration issue. So that's all I wanted to say, and I would be happy to move the staff recommendation on Mr. Lawrence, item number 10 on our agenda, page 37.
Okay, so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, item number 11, staff report.
Okay, Mr. Scout, again, had a previous violation in the second quarter of 2019. You folks had given him a letter of education, but then was late in third quarter of 19 and fourth quarter of 19. So third quarter of 19, the penalty was already $50, which I would have considered a minimum penalty for second quarter. Fourth quarter is $70. Again, my recommendation is have no reduction, because I would say that a third violation should have a minimum of at least $100 or the amount. So my recommendation was no reduction of either third or fourth quarter penalties.
Okay. Any discussion? Yes, Commissioner Edwards.
Oh, just out of consistency, I'm going to abstain from voting on this because last time I did the same. So.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on this matter? Yes, Mr. Burke.
Chair, I move we adopt staff recommendation.
All right, so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Sorkin?
I didn't hear that. Was that me?
Yes, please. Commissioner Sorkin?
Oh, aye. Thank you.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Abstained.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0 with one abstention.
Okay. Item number 12. Staff report.
So this is a client employee report. They were late for first and third quarter 2019. They did not ask for any kind of mitigation for those and paid $10 for first quarter and $90 for third quarter. Now this is fourth quarter at $130. I recommended a minimum penalty of $100 for the third quarter, or for the third violation for fourth quarter 2019.
Okay.
So moved.
All right. Star moves that we proceed with staff recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? All right, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sorkin?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, item number 13.
Okay, again, another client employer. So they are late for first quarter, third, and fourth quarter of 2019. So my recommendation is a letter of education for the first quarter, and then no reduction for
third and fourth quarter, means that the penalty for third quarter is $20 and for fourth quarter is $60, under the minimums, I would say, for a second and third violation.
Okay. Any discussion? Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, move we adopt staff recommendation.
So moved. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Sorkin?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
If you call Commissioner Fiskum, he votes aye.
Thank you.
He votes
Chair
aye.
Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. item number 14, James Kopfer, stipulated final order.
Yes. Chair Sosa, Commissioners, this is Diane Gale for the Commission staff. Mr. Kopfer was a planning commissioner for the City of Sherwood in 2013, 2014, and 2015, and as such, he was required to file an annual verified statement of economic interest. He failed to file his three SEIs until March of 2017. The signed stipulated final order is in your meeting book for approval. The final order covers both of Mr. Kopfer's cases with the sanction of a letter of education. This is a continuation of cleaning up old cases of SEI filers.
Okay. Any questions or discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that this board agrees to the stipulated final order.
So moved. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Sorkin?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Item 15, a default final order.
Chair Sosa, Commissioners, this is Diane Gould. Mr. Dell was the Gold Hill City Councilor when he participated in an improper executive session on July 16th of 2018. The Commission made preliminary findings of two violations of ORS 192.660 on November 22nd of last year and offered Mr. Dell a contested case hearing as well as an offer to settle the matter for a letter of education. Mr. Dell received those materials by certified mail on November 28th. He failed to request a contested case hearing in this matter, and he failed to respond to the settlement offer. On December 24th, Mr. Dell was provided again the offer of a stipulated final order for a letter of education and notified that a default final order may be taken if he did not respond. As noted in the executive director's memo regarding deviation from the penalty matrix, the proposed default final orders in the meeting book call for a $200 civil penalty due to the aggravating factors of a lack of response to settlement proposals and the failure of the respondent to follow written advice from the city's insurer and the League of Oregon City's attorney not to hold the executive session, which led to the violations in the first place.
All right. Any questions or discussion on this one?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum, if this is a good moment.
Yes, Commissioner Fiskum, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to express my appreciation to the staff, Mr. Burson and Ms. Gould, and anybody else who contributed to this information. Without arguing with the staff recommendation necessarily, the fact that Mr. Dell has avoided talking with the commission at almost every instance, it strikes me that I could support a higher penalty than $200, given his attitude toward the commission, or perhaps more accurately, lack of attitude to respect the commission. That said, I'll go with the consensus here. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, for sure.
Not to be morbid, but do we know if this person is alive?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he signed the certified mail card in November.
Yeah, like weekend infirmities.
And I should say that the two other counselors from the City of Gold Hill who participated in this same executive session also got default final orders for $200, so this would be consistent with those other cases.
They didn't respond either, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
They got the materials. I mean, I did talk to them on the phone. And
did they pay it?
Not yet.
What's going on in Gold Bay?
Okay. All right, entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move we go with staff recommendation on the default final order.
Okay, so moved. Any discussion on the matter? All right, we'll call vote, please.
Commissioner Edwards.
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum.
Aye.
Commissioner Keene.
Aye.
Commissioner Sartoon.
Aye.
Commissioner Starr.
Aye.
Commissioner Burke.
Aye.
Chair Sosa.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, item number 16.
Chair, item number 16 has been pulled from the consideration today at the request of the respondent's attorneys, who is not available to attend the meeting today. And since time's been waived in the matter, we can set it forward.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So next we're moving to the correspondence, the non-action items, 17 through 26. Is there anything that staff would like to point out on these? Or
I have a question about one of them. Thank you. Regarding item 18, the Christine John Scenic Middle School Application Ethics Laws for Travel Companies Reward Program, I just wanted to sort of understand and maybe educate us all about the difference in advice that Ms. John apparently received, and just to tease it out a little bit. She went on these education, she led these educational trips, and she got free trips, and then as well as some DVDs. And it looks like, if what she's saying is correct, that she had been advised that since this opportunity is given not just to government officials but to others, that it's not a gift, or a fault, it's not a gift. And I, perhaps you've already worked this out, but I just wanted to clarify that that analysis about whether it's, which we've applied to situations where places like AT&T or whatever, or different large companies provide discounts to government groups. You said it's not a but-for violation because when it's offered to non-governmental groups as well. But that's a different analysis than whether it's a gift, right? That's the difference here. As I agree, Ron, with your decision that you issued on 1231, that they are gifts. And then the first one would be an exception, and the second one wouldn't, the DVD player. And so we never would get into the question of whether the but-for rule applies, correct?
On gifts?
Well, in this one, yeah, in general, but on this one in particular, that it seems like that was the advice being given. And I want to clarify just internally that we don't do that kind of analysis about whether it's offered to private folks as well as public folks if it's within the gift rules, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the gift rules does have that provision in there that says, you know, offered to others under the same terms and conditions.
Isn't that the but-for rule?
No, it's
under gift rule.
It's the definition of gift.
Okay,
so
do we have a... It's because 244040, prohibited use of office, says that the prohibition does not apply to gifts.
Gifts. Right. So it sounded like the staff advice had been that because it doesn't fall under a it's not a gift under 244.0207, but then our executive director's advice was that it is a gift, it's not accepted. So I just wanted us internally to understand if there's a disconnect that we're having here.
I understand what you're saying.
Because I get asked this question all the time, and I want to make sure that my understanding is correct.
Because
Right. And what 2G says is that prohibited use of office does not apply to the receipt by a public official of any item that is expressly excluded from the definition of gift, which this is expressly excluded from the definition of gift because it's...
But that's just the travel.
Right. Just the travel.
Just the travel.
But you found it was excluded not because it's offered to private teachers as well as public teachers, but rather because it's reasonable expenses paid to a public school employee for accompanying students on an educational trip, which is an explicit exemption.
Right.
Not because it was offered to public. And I think the analysis in the staff was it doesn't even meet gift rules, if I'm understanding you, because it's not offered specifically to... only to government officials, and I don't think that's the test.
There were two things at issue. One was the trips that she was taking with students, which are specifically accepted under their own exception. The rest were rewards program, and part of the complication here was that Ms. John had called us several times, talked to a couple different staff members, and the information we got...
Oh, I know how that goes.
Okay. So that's where, some of that came into play. But what we were talking about as far as the... trips she took through EF, the consensus of the staff, because we did discuss this quite a bit, was those trips were not being offered in the same terms and conditions as people outside of the public official realm, simply because she, as a public school teacher, was marketing to and soliciting students in her classes to take these trips, offered as ostensibly, part of their public school education. Which it was not, but that was the impression, and that was the marketing that was done by EF through the teachers.
But even if that was true, doesn't it still fall into the exception under the one that Ron wrote it on, reasonable expenses paid to a public school
employee? No, because she wasn't chaperoning students on some of these trips. There were two different classes of trips. One was, I believe, a trip to Egypt she took with her husband and her father, and EF paid for pretty much everything, but there were no students on that trip. So when we're talking about chaperoning students on a trip, that's its own exception. There were trips that were offered through the rewards program separate and apart from that.
And you guys thought that it was an exception because it's offered to, because I don't think your letter actually addresses that work, and you, it's your position that that's not even a gift because it's offered...
No, I think what we concluded was would be subject to the gift limitations outlined in ORS 244025. That was the final sentence before, if you have any additional questions. And again, keeping in mind that we're talking about two separate classes of trips, one taken with students, one taken as part of the rewards program.
I guess I'm looking at her email where she says that she's talked to these luxury occasions. Her advice has been that since private and parochial teachers can also lead these trips and have the same opportunity to earn the awards, that the Egypt trip does not meet the qualifications or definition of a gift. And I'm wondering if
she wrote that after she and I had a discussion in which she mentioned trips that she was taking with students, and I told her that those were the trips offered to students where she was a chaperone.
So it's not because they're also parochial schools?
No.
Misstated that.
No, it was, I've spoken to Ms. John many times, and there was a little bit, I think, of a communication breakdown, and I'll own my part in that. When we talked, I asked her very specifically because she has chaperoned. She's done dozens of these trips. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was up to gold platinum status with, EF rewards based on the trip she took and the number of students that she took with her. So again, the complication was that I was providing information to her based on the trips that were chaperoned and covered under their separate, discrete exception of the gift.
Okay.
So I think that was the basis of the confusion. But again, I think our analysis summed it up at the end that, we had two separate classes of trips we were talking about.
Okay. I thought the two analyses were about... Okay. I get this 1231 letter. I guess I'm still trying to tease out whether she just completely misstated it, or is it relevant that private and parochial teachers can also have these same opportunities? How is that relevant? Yeah, is it?
I think that what we discussed, and again, there was a lot of discussion about this one because it was tricky and different, and again, the EF, presence also, clouded some of this as well. That again, as a public school teacher, she is the one that has the ability to market, and solicit these trips for great numbers of kids. There's volume there that would not exist in a parochial school setting.
Well, I think the other thing that we've always said on that offer to others, that it's got to be significant portion of the population.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is just school teachers. So I don't think the rewards program that she's getting for chaperoning these kids, getting the free trips to Egypt, getting the DVD players, there's some other things too, that I think we were trying to be specific in this letter saying that those are gifts, and if you do accept them, it would be over the $50, obviously. But we will look at that as the gift provision. But that offered to others, it's basically got to be, what I look at is stuff like, with the state of Oregon, I can get into Costco, you know, and Costco's offered to others. I know we used it years ago when we did the gift analysis on cell phone discounts. Now we've switched to use of office, but we actually were asking the cell phone companies, what others are you offering to?
I remember, but I thought that was on the same terms.
And it was lots of people. No, that was, originally that was a gift provision because it had to be offered to others. And the commission has been pretty consistent over all the years that I've been here that that's a significant portion of the population.
Uh-huh.
So just because I don't think we're going to get that in teachers and compared to private school teachers as opposed to public school teachers, that they could take these trips underneath the P exception but earn the rewards during that time to get free trips for themselves, their spouse, their relatives, and other benefits, you know, other gifts that were given to them, DVD players, I think she mentioned in there, mm-hmm. too. So,
okay. Commissioner Keene, if I might add one thing I just thought of when I looked through my file was her phraseology about the gifts being offered to others, you know, parochial schools and that. We did have a very long conversation when she first called me. She didn't mention the trips or EF. What she was talking about were rewards offered to teachers. And I remember the conversation was me saying something along the lines of, are you talking about like Barnes & Noble, where they have their educator discount, and that is offered to college right. professors and teachers and whatever. So that was an example I gave her. So like I said, when this letter came in, I'm thinking, you know, she and I had that conversation very shortly before our second conversation and our third conversation, and then the letter came in. So,
okay. Thanks. I totally understand that somebody could mischaracterize unintentionally even what the discussions were, but I guess it was just for my own clarification mm-hmm. of how we apply this.
That's tricky.
I think it would not be a bad idea to follow up with her and make sure she understands that sentence.
I've spoken to her 5 times okay. this week, so
she knows. She knows that this is not, you know.
Okay.
Trips, DVD players, paper clips, music stands.
Thank you.
No, sure. Thank you for
that. So, Chair, you can see that it was a, you know, it hasn't really been that long since we had a meeting, but I think a lot of times when the legislature comes to town, we get a lot more questions, but there was quite a bit of advice that actually went out this last last time.
I had a question about one of them, the artwork for the t-shirt. I'm sure we had some concern over that. I wonder if there's a legislative fix or what. I feel like there's ethics and there's like a moral compass, right? And this felt like it teetered a little like, couldn't seriously nothing be done.
Commissioner Edwards, if I may, that we did have, as you stated, some heartburn and many discussions about this. And the bottom line came down to when we were talking about a slightly similar case where one agency was receiving pallets when they received equipment that would come with a wooden pallet. And we were told, hey, we have to pay money to get rid of these. You know, doesn't that make it, you know, surplus or waste or whatnot? And the advice there was that, you know, those pallets had ownership value or had value to the original owners who had purchased them. The same analogy worked with the artwork, that because it was going to be the city of Lake Oswego paying for the artwork, the supplies, the canvas, the paint, the brushes, that they were actually the original purchasers as to anyone else in the world of those supplies that then became, you know, the artwork that was going to be used as part of the education class. So that was just our reasoning as a way of giving you a little background on that.
Commissioner, one thing they could do is they could make this part of her official compensation.
Yeah, correct.
You can keep the artwork that you generate. They could do that.
Yeah. Did we give them that information? And they were a volunteer, right?
Yeah, in the absence. Oh, was this a volunteer? No,
she's paid.
She's paid.
She was paid, but just sort of out of the blue was they decided, hey, you're going to be the one that's going to teach the star class. We did address the official compensation. If you look at page 78,
at the end,
second to last full paragraph that we mentioned, because the question had been asked about, you know, could this be part of official compensation, even though they weren't agreeing to pay this poor person any more money. They just wanted to know what to do with the artwork. And so we did indicate that it was not at this point official compensation, but here are the Oregon administrative rules that cover how to do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Sometimes it's difficult being a public official.
I was thinking the same thing. Right.
Just hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Any other questions or discussion about any of the staff advice letters? Okay. Well,
thank you for all the work on that.
I know sometimes it feels like all we tell people is no. But
that's what I do. They appreciate it later.
Yeah.
Or they don't know that they
don't
should
know,
appreciate
right.
it.
That should never be on the cover
right.
of the
newspaper.
Right. That's right. Okay. So item 27, discussion of legislative concepts.
I was wondering, Chair, if you wanted to finish up and then
circle back to that one.
Yeah, I was trying to do that maybe while you folks ate.
Okay. Well, we're making such good time.
Right? I know we are.
Here we are.
You know, it's always a struggle. I always err on the side of getting lunch for you folks as opposed to not getting lunch for you folks.
We do appreciate it.
I hate for you to be here about 1 or 2 in the afternoon and not have anything to eat other than Commissioner Starr's.
Right.
Yeah, you'd be in my mindset. Yeah.
We are.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. All right, then. Well, in that case, we'll do the trainer's report then. Item
we'll go ahead and get
number 28.
I have eval sheets from the conference that Mark participated in. Very positive.
It's hard to get sometimes.
I did.
Yeah.
Great.
Five people saying five different things back into the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, so, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Trainer support, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Chair Sosa and commissioners. In your meeting materials is a listing of the training that has taken place as well as what is upcoming. We have a February and March webinar calendar as well. It's under the March 4th, 2020 for the DAS Procurement Convention. It's tentatively scheduled for 10 o'clock to 11:15. That has been confirmed. Also, as always, any training session is open to commissioners. If you're interested in attending one, please get a hold of me. I'm happy to supply all the details and for the attendance. Okay? Western Liberty Network, we provided training earlier this month on February 1st for them. It was a good session, and it was a pleasure to provide. So thank you, Commissioner Burke, for the opportunity to do so.
I would like to thank you and the entire organization for participating in this conference. There were 20 breakout sessions held throughout the day, 4 concurrently and 5 separate sessions. And we asked everyone to fill out evaluation sheets. And, of course, not everybody fills out evaluation sheets, but there were 5 that did fill out evaluation sheets. And they were overwhelmingly positive. And so I'd love to see that. And we use the evaluation sheets, of course, to provide feedback and improve the event. And this is the 3rd year that the commission has participated in this annual conference. And so, again, thank you to Monica for her excellent work.
Thank you for the opportunity. Also, Special District Association of Oregon, there was a great turnout for that one. I just recently did that last week. And there were approximately 120 persons in attendance there, so it was a good turnout. The group was very engaged. They had a very high level of participation. They asked asked a lot of questions, clarifying questions, provided a lot of scenarios, that they run into in their district, so it really was a great session. For the Oregon Health Authority, there is an update on that. You may recall that we do monthly training for them because they have such a, they're such a large agency. They have such a high number of new appointees or new, they orient new employees. And so they offer monthly training, and they their training is a two-day session. They are doing an across-the-board look at their practices there. So our monthly training may change depending on what the outcome of that revision is. So other than that, that is the report, if there's any questions.
So I have a question. So
yes.
What we talked about, I'm trying to find it on here. Because I know I argued about going back down to Medford, because we're in Medford all the time. But you had told me there was going to be approximately like 600 people at three sessions in Medford. I'm just not seeing it here.
It's actually scheduled for the end of June, and so that's why I didn't post it on this training report. Okay. But yes.
That's a really big one. The other thing I want to point out to the commissioners is these conferences that are out here, like this Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. These are really important ones for us to go to because we get to go to those. We attack the head of the department, which, you know, a lot of stuff trickles down through there. So if we can train the chiefs, because we get a lot of police officers asking us questions, talk about being office gifts. I mean, police officers are offered gifts a lot for helping people out and things like that. And so these are really kind of great things. So if any of you folks are hanging around Sun River, I guess, at the end of the month, feel free to come by, but we should have reports on things like this. So and then the Department of Administrative Services procurement services. You might know that the state of Oregon is going through a big procurement change. There's going to be the Oregon Buys program, which is supposed to try to get consistency throughout the state on buying different items, so everybody's buying through the kind of the same program, so we're a much bigger consumer to get better prices and things like that. And so procurement people is right there on the kind of the cutting edge of buying things. And if, as you know, most private vendors will offer discounts or different things like that. So these kind of trainings really, I want to say, kind of get to the heart of what we do, and we can hit a smaller group, but it hits a much larger group of people out there. So, and so we appreciate Monica doing this. I know we're short-staffed at the time. We're going to report out in my report, but the recruitment is out for the other trainer. How many people did you say we had?
22 as of this morning.
Like most recruitments, there's always a bunch that comes in at the end. We won't hire all those procrastinators, though. No, I'm just
thinking. I would never have gotten a job.
I know. We all kind of wait to the last minute to hurry up and get that done. But anyway, so we started on the process. So we should be pretty deep into it by the next meeting anyway, maybe down to a choice or pretty close to a choice to have somebody else come in here. So.
It closes on the 24th, and incidentally, going back to the chiefs of police this morning, I confirmed that the time for that will be 12:30 to 2:30.
They have particular interest tonight because there are very additional significant consequences to police officers if there's an ethical violation and whether they can testify and things like that. So it's really, really important.
Yeah, I also... I want to point this out that
Metro
in here. So
since I left, the attorney there doesn't want to be telling the council what the gift was.
So they lost their ethics expert, and
she's an expert, but she just doesn't feel like she wants to. There's a whole new council, so. Good luck.
I will tell you that the. The Portland auditors, and this isn't Metro, but the Portland auditors came to visit us and wanted to talk to us about certain things. But one of the things, basically what they want to do is they want to know if we wanted the outcomes of some of their audits that they have, if they think that it affects any areas that we might be interested in. But they also talked about having us come in and train. And it's always been one of the holes in the commission that I've always seen is the city of Portland, Metro, and things like this. And you could have been part of the problem with that. Because they haven't asked us for this training. And, you know, they're one of our if you want to talk about clients, I mean, the city of Portland has 5,000 employees. So they're one of our bigger clients. I mean, they pay a pretty good sum for us to exist in our assessment fee. And they've really not asked for that help in the past. And so having the actual city auditor come down here, and they brought a couple people with them out of her office. So they outnumbered us in the meeting anyway. So anyway, they felt it was important to come talk to us. They drove down here to talk to us. And it looks like it's going to get us kind of an in into Portland to try to help them with some of the training.
So you can help through the auditor's office.
Yeah.
I'm happy to help with that, though.
Yeah. Awesome help.
Did we lose somebody again? I heard a beep.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to check to see if...
Anna, Dave, are you guys still there?
Commissioner Priscom is still here. Thank you.
Okay.
Anna?
She must be in a marginal area.
Okay, I'm going to try to get her back on the phone.
She must be on the phone. Anyway, I would love to get into Portland and talk to some folks, because I not that I think there's anything wrong happening up there, but it seems like they're underserviced for what they pay for our assessment.
This is Anna.
Okay, we got you back.
Yeah, thanks.
Uh-huh.
I'm happy to help with that, Ron, if I can be as
well. Oh, that'd be great. That would absolutely be great. I'll have Monica get a hold of you and see if we can't mm-hmm. help with something. And like I said, I'm happy to participate, too. I don't know, sometimes I'm really not a very good trainer, but sometimes they like the executive director to come. So I know the School Board Association asked me to come one time, and halfway through, Lori Sabin still kind of yelled at me to get out from behind the podium and actually train. So she was like training me to be a trainer. So standing there being robotic and just reading off of the
well, people are just inspired PowerPoint. By your glowing
eyes. Yeah.
I think Lizzie Reese is the city attorney who does the ethics training, so you might want to talk to her too.
That's for City Hall. Like, I think that's one constituency, but the Portland building just opened up, and that would be a good opportunity to talk to more, you know, kind of bureau director and below.
Yeah, I just always felt they've been underserved for you know, what they pay for us.
Yeah.
And we know we've had folks, you know, from the Portland area anyway, be before us. And I mean, the idea behind the training is to keep them away from that end of the room. So, okay.
Very good. Well, Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for
the opportunity. So, executive director report.
So, if you could hand out a couple of things here.
I already scanned the moment.
This one or this one? Oh. Did you give them this one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll have one thing to go around. So, you might see that, you know, I'm not putting the Brio reports in because DAS, in their infinite wisdom, has decided that we're really not going to use those anymore. So they're not putting the financial plan into the Brio reports, which I always thought was a great tool for myself as the financial manager around here, kind of seeing where we were at in the overall 24-month plan, what we've spent, what we have to spend. So I'm a little disheartened with that. So really we're going to start working off of really these forecasts that we have here. And I know it's kind of more complex and kind of harder to do, but
CPS.
And it isn't colored because we don't have a colored printer. But really what I want to point out to you is that the end, the summary, we are at this point $30,000 ahead. Now, having said that, that didn't look very good. I think I'm going to cut off on the end here. Anyway, legislative fiscal, we have a fix in this legislative session right now
because our flat rate for the AG's office was basically under. So what it was is they determined how much we were going to get for the AG in our agency request budget before the Attorney General actually came out with the flat rate. So once they came out with the flat rate, it was quite a bit higher than what they'd actually approved us for. So they're doing a legislative fix in this February session. We did not have to participate in that because we actually have the funds here. We don't have to ask for the funds from anybody. It's in our ending balance. So the $61,000 that's coming to us is still our money. It's just letting us have the limitation so I can spend it. So that $30,000 is going to be increased by $61,000. Now, I know I said in the report it was $64,783. Well, that was the amount before we did all the figuring, but it's actually going to be $61,301. So our numbers were just a little bit off there. And this will be an end-of-session bill that goes through that fixes that. Okay. So the auditors came back to visit us. I guess they're through with their special project, so they're starting back up with us again. They had told us, what did they tell us, Diane? Was it July, August, something?
Well, because of your trip to Africa, probably.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I haven't gone, but I'm going to South Africa anyway. But that's when they're talking about getting this thing through, and we will have drafts of that beforehand that we should be able to report out to us. We'll be able to participate in. Of course, we will fashion a letter back to them on their findings, which will become also part of the audit. So they've gone away for a few months doing a special project, but they came back in force. I guess there was two or three of them there.
Will they submit a draft?
Yes. We'll discuss the draft, and we'll be able to respond to it if we think there's any errors that they've made or they just didn't understand something. And like I say, we'll be able. They may agree or disagree with our assessment too, but at the end, you know, we'll be able to write a letter, and if we just aren't agreeing on something, then that would be part of that letter too. So. But I just want to kind of point out the purpose of this audit. You know, it's a performance audit, so it's really trying to get just another set of eyes on us to try to, you know, kind of a unfiltered set of eyes to be able to look at us and just give us suggestions on how to do this better. I mean, I don't think there's not a problem with we're spending too much money here or there. It's not a financial audit. It's just the legislature's asked us to do things in the statutes here, and are we doing them, or could we do them better? One of the things I noticed that came out of this last meeting was anonymous complaints. I mean, I think that's that you may see something like that. It feels like that's what they're kind of going with, that people are intimidated by whoever they're complaining on. That prevents them from complaining to us. And so, as you know, our statutes require it to be a signed complaint, so no anonymity is allowed there. So
they can do it. So I mean, we could. One idea would be that they have to sign them, but that it's not a public record.
Well, we would obviously need to know who they were. Because I still believe that the complainant has to participate, especially in the preliminary review, because whatever they write on a piece of paper will not cover all the questions that my investigators are going to have. So, but whether or not we disclose their name, I think that's something. But I know Kip, who is the director of audits. He sent me a performance audit he did for the city of Denver when he was the auditor there, and that was a big push in that audit was for anonymous.
Yeah. I mean, we could establish a tip line or an email and then do our own motions for something that looks like it has some substance to it that we might want to independently look at if someone really felt they needed to preserve their anonymity.
Yeah, and I think that's...
I think that's kind of happened in the past, that people have provided us with, say, audits and things like that that they have seen, and so they've provided us with materials that just isn't their opinion, or, you know, I mean, they've actually provided us with evidence and brought it in the past, and we have brought it forward as that. But anyway, that's just one area that I know that they've talked about a couple of times with us. One of the ideas, though, that I thought was a good idea anyway. I told them it had some value. Getting, like, trying to educate folks about our existence and what we regulate. And as most people that are in workplaces, you see in the back of the workplaces, you have your Bureau of Labor laws and things like that. And to have a requirement to post, in, at least in public workplaces, you know, maybe just some of the basic ethics laws and who to contact and things like that. And so just trying to get the word out to a lot of folks of our existence. And because they'd ask the question, you know, do you think we could walk into, you know, just a state agency and maybe walk up to the front desk and ask somebody, like, so what's the Ethics Commission do? It's like, what kind of answer will we get? So I think it's a fair thing to ask. So you know, I told them our struggle of trying to, like, I think Monica talked earlier about the Oregon Health Authority, that they have such turnover and they have so much hiring that they actually have monthly orientation meetings for employees coming in. I mean, it's a, you know, 9,000 person agency, and so you know, our problem has never been this group that's been a public officials, but the public officials inside of this container change all the time, and trying to keep up with them, trying to keep them to know that they're public officials. And that's been our struggle in training, is trying to get everybody trained. Just about the time you get, if you did get everybody trained, they switch the next day to, there's new people that come in every single day, we're hiring. So anyway, I thought that was a kind of a simple idea. It may take some kind of statutory change to require that kind of posting, like some of the other ones do, but even on a volunteer basis, that might be something that's helpful. But anyway, so those folks are back. We should have something. Well, we'll keep you updated as they keep us updated. So in the session, there's one bill in the session, is House Bill 4123. It makes some changes to the SEI reporting, and what it's trying to do is it is trying to drill down with people that are business owners, and it's drilling down into their clients. So clients provide over 10% of the income for the business, they would report those clients. Now there's an out in the bill for what I just, one of the examples I know of is attorneys having say who their clients are. And it doesn't say the amount of money that each client does, but you would know if they'd go over 10% of their business. So I know Representative Holby called yesterday. He was going to go to a work session today. We had some talk, and so Representative Rayfield, he is sponsoring the bill. I think he would be getting a hold of us, because we have some concerns about, again, we're not the policymakers, but making that work on our system, the time it would take to reprogram, and, of course, the funds it takes to reprogram. And as you know, with the short session, anytime you talk about a fiscal, that's a jump into ways and means, it's probably going to die because it just doesn't have enough time to go through that process and come back out and make it through both houses. So I know they try to stay away from a fiscal, but the bottom line is there will be a fiscal on this, because, as you know, we're going to have to reprogram our computers because people would have to have another spot. The other problem that I have with it is if somebody does file a complaint on that, I would have to come to your business. You'd have to show me the books of all your clients so that I can determine who has 10% and who does not have 10%.
Very intrusive.
And I'm not sure that would be I'd be all that welcomed in there. So I have some concerns about things like that. But I understand what they're trying to get to. They're trying to get to the public officials, but sometimes I believe they look at themselves as being the public officials. But you have to remember this, SEIs cover city councils, planning commissions. I mean, there's all kinds of folks out there that are SEI colleges, not just legislators. And so I suspect, I used an example yesterday, that many people that sit on planning commissions are on the real estate business, either the realtors, they're developers, or they have interest in real estate, and that's why they're on a planning commission. And so gathering all of their clients. So anyway, that's the one bill that does concern us right now, and so we are working with House Rules on it right now. I want to point out that, you know, I know you folks, every time we go through some lobbyists and some client things, but the numbers are getting so low on that. I'm really happy with the system. That's why I kind of hate to mess with it a bit, because it's working really well right now. But, you know, all of SEIs are filed. I mean, we are down to, you know, three clients. All the lobbies filed for fourth quarter. So that's really good. And I already talked about the trainer's position. I put down here the letter, too.
Yeah, it was distributed earlier. It was on everyone's place.
Did I have a copy of it?
It should have been. There was an email from the county surveyor. That Michael Springer. It was the case from a few months ago, and the commission did dismiss the investigation, but had us issue a letter of education to him, and so he responded to let us know kind of where they're at and how they're doing it, because they've implemented various changes. He's now billing under his own name. They've put conflict of interest statements on the website, and that he's also going to be kind of presenting the case from his perspective to the Conference of County Surveyors. So I just thought he wanted to share that information with you so that you would know it kind of worked out.
Thank you. That's great. I don't see that he mentions anything about putting things out to bid.
No, he didn't quite go there.
I'm not sure he totally guessed it. It's a little... I wonder if we could join him, one of the trainers could join him at this conference, because I hate to have him give out wrong information.
I did encourage that for him to give us a call, or we could help.
Because the bidding is a big part of it. The conflict of interest doesn't actually even come up unless he's reviewing, unless he's on bidding. So I'm not sure he totally gets it.
Okay, well, we can definitely get a hold of him and see if we can't invite ourselves to that and send somebody in. And,
I called the organizer of the convention.
Okay. Yeah. So unless there's any questions, I don't know if you guys want to take a break and get lunch, and then if we can talk about the legislative concepts. So, Virginia?